Joe Poznanski has been named Associated Press Sports Columnist of the Year twice. His debut book, The Soul of Baseball, chronicles a year he spent traveling across the country with Buck O'Neill, the legendary Negro League slugger, who died just last November, a month shy of 95. The Soul of Baseball is published by HarperCollins, and I'm very pleased that it has brought Mr. Poznanski to my program today. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
When did you meet Buck O'Neill?
I actually met him quite a few years ago, about 10 years ago, when I first became a columnist in Kansas City. Buck lived in Kansas City, and as a sports columnist, he was obviously a wealth of information and column possibilities. And so I met him about 10 years ago, but the idea of this book really didn't spring up till about 3 or 4 years ago.
Actually, the book began as something quite different, didn't it?
It did. We went to lunch, and Buck had mentioned to me that he thought somebody needed to write a book about the Negro Leagues as a whole. It wasn't going to be about Buck. It was going to be about how much fun they had. He felt like the Negro Leagues had always, people always talk about the tragedy of the Negro Leagues. They always talk about the hotels where they couldn't sleep and the restaurants where they couldn't eat and the bounce checks and those sorts of things.
Which all occurred.
All occurred, and obviously all very important, and Buck never undersold that. But he also felt there was a missing part of this, and that was the joy that they had playing the game.
Well, he had written an autobiography.
He had.
He focused on those things as well.
He did, and he told some wonderful stories in the book. But he felt that there needed to be something a little bit wider and a little bit faster about it.
He was here after he wrote the biography, and what I remember best is that he was quite old and sharp as a tack and remembered everything.
Absolutely remembered everything. And I think that was one of the extraordinary things about him.
So he told you a lot of good stories. Do you have any favorites?
I have a lot of favorites. There were some just amazing stories. But to me, my favorite part of it was we traveled around the country together, and just to see the way people responded to him. I mean, it was just, there was just no bitterness in this man, despite having dealt with a lot of difficulties in his life. And people sensed that being around him.
Now, why was he traveling around the country all the time? He was 85 years old or even more.
Yeah, he was 94 years old. He was traveling around to talk about the Negro Leagues. This was sort of his... He wanted to tell this story, and he wanted people to know what the Negro Leagues were like, what it was like before baseball was integrated. And he would travel around the country talking at various groups, talking, going to games and telling stories. The Negro Leagues Baseball Museum is in Kansas City, and that was really his baby. And he would talk about the museum and try to tell the stories and try to explain to people what it was like. And that, I think, the last 30 or 40 years of his life, you know, after being a player and a manager and a scout and the first African-American coach in the major leagues and all of these other things he'd achieved, I think he felt like the purpose of his life was to keep alive the memory of the Negro Leagues.
Now, he was the first African-American coach, you say, but he was too old at the time that Jackie Robinson broke the color barrier to become a player in the majors?
Or? Yeah, he was 36 when that happened, when he went through, and he was still a very good player in the Negro Leagues, but he was a little bit too old, and he wanted to be a manager. That's really what he wanted to do, and he became a manager in the Negro Leagues, and then, of course, became a coach in the major leagues. But I think if he had a disappointment, it was that he never got a chance to manage in the major leagues.
There were some elderly Negro League stars who wound up playing in the majors, Satchel Paige being probably the most famous. And Jackie Robinson was no kid when he started.
Virtually all of them. When you talk about Monty Irvin, when you talk about Jackie Robinson, when you talk about Satchel Paige, of course, a lot of players like that got through, but not all of them. And in fact, I would say that a pretty wide percentage, there's a very big percentage of players who were about Buck's age who just missed it, just missed the cusp. And some of them are in the Hall of Fame right now, Ray Dandridge being one example of those players who were just not quite, because they didn't have the time to go to the minor leagues and do that.
Now, why didn't Buck O'Neill make it into the Hall of Fame? He came very close and died knowing that he had just missed.
Yeah, and I was there with him the day that it happened. There was a special panel put together to put Negro Leaguers into the Hall of Fame, and the panel essentially voted him. He was one vote short of getting into the Hall of Fame, and the reasons they've never really come out and said, but I think that generally what's accepted is that Buck was a very good player, but he wasn't a Hall of Fame player. He was a Hall of Fame career when you take everything into consideration. But just as a player, he probably was not good enough. And I think that that's the way they viewed it instead of taking the wide view.
Well, how can you even judge those things? Because he was playing – this is to some degree, it seems to me, because some of these Negro team leagues seemed to be a combination of minstrel shows and baseball teams, it would be hard to tell whether a guy who's a star of the Harlem Globetrotters would have been one of the great basketball players.
Well, I think that there was certainly a period of time there, especially in the late 1930s and 1940s, where the Negro League's quality of baseball was very, very close to the quality of baseball in the major leagues. And I think that players of that era were pretty widely accepted to be great players. Everybody knew how good Satchel Paige was before he became to the major leagues. And I think that the fact that right after integration, among the first players to go to the major leagues are Jackie Robinson, Frank Robinson, Hank Aaron, Willie Mays. I mean, some of the greatest players of all time. And it certainly goes to figure that the previous 10, 20, 30 years, there many of these great players were just never found.
Had Buck ever played with one of the Wilder teams? There was one called the Zulu Cannibal Giants.
Yeah, and that's one of those minstrel show teams you were talking about. And it was always one of those memories that pained him a lot. He did. It was a team that they would dress up with grass skirts, and they would do vaguely African-looking dances, and they would use clubs instead of bats, and it was a minstrel show that people would come out to see. And he didn't play with that team very long, and he was always ashamed to talk about that team.
Although there was a whole show busy side to baseball in the early days, not just when it came to race. There was the House of David team where everybody played with a long beard. Baseball was a different sport in those days.
Yeah, and I think the funny thing is I think Buck always enjoyed that side of it. I mean, you know, in the Negro Leagues, it was very much a part of things. They would have dancers, and they would have various kinds of people performing before and after the games, and he never had a problem with that. I think what bothered him so much about playing for the Zulu team was just how degrading it was, and I think that was what troubled him.
My guest is Joe Posnanski, who's been a sports columnist at the Kansas City Star since 1996 and has won the Associated Press Sports Columnist of the Year Award, which is the top honor for sports column writing, twice. He's now written a book called The Soul of Baseball, A Road Trip Through Buck O'Neill's America. It is published by William Morrow. Do you see Buck O'Neill in some ways embodying the soul of baseball?
I do. I really do. I think that the thing that always struck me everywhere we would go is how people would want to come up to Buck and tell him their baseball stories. They always wanted, it's as if he was the one guy who could understand what it was like to go with your dad to your first game, or to go to spring training and hang around the players. I think Buck really did embody that for so many people, and the life he lived, just the extraordinary baseball life that he lived. I mean, here's a guy that saw Babe Ruth play and saw Josh Gibson play and saw Barry Bonds play. I mean, a guy that certainly encompassed virtually the entire history of baseball.
And although he obviously had a tremendous affection for the way things were in the past, he seemed to be living very much in the present and liking what was going on today. Not one of those guys that said, well, in the good old days.
Absolutely, very much so. He used to say, one of my favorite expressions, people would always say to him, oh, I remember when baseball was still baseball, and Buck would always stop them and say, baseball is still baseball. He loved the game, and he loved the players today. And I think that he never found more joy than when he was around baseball players.
And yet he could remember things about the small towns that you traveled through. In the Negro League, they played in smaller towns?
Well, they did. What they would do is they would play. Sunday would be the big day. They would have their doubleheaders on Sunday, and they would play each other. And then they would travel to the next Sunday. They would travel to all of these little towns. They'd play town teams, the House of David team that you mentioned. They just played all over the place. And for many of these small towns, especially in the Midwest, at a time when baseball was no further west than St. Louis, this was the baseball they saw.
The first baseball game I ever saw when I was a little kid was involved a team called the Bushwicks and a Negro League team. And they were playing somewhere near Franklin K. Lane High School. I can't remember. Bushwick Stadium, I think it was called. So that lasted into the time where Jackie Robinson was already in the majors.
Absolutely. And years after that as well. I mean, it certainly, it's amazing how many people, that's their first memory. Their first memory is seeing a Negro Leagues team.
And people came up to him and said, I remember you. Do you remember me?
That would happen all the time. People would often.
Did he say he remembered them?
Always said he remembered them. Always.
Obviously didn't.
Well, he had an amazing memory, but I'm not sure it was good enough to remember games from 1943.
What did he once say to a glum woman in a New York elevator?
That's always one of my favorite stories. When we were here in New York, we went in and this elevator, we were going down, and there was a very sad-looking woman in the elevator, and Buck walked in and said, I'm Buck O'Neill. What's your name? And she was very reluctant to talk to him. And as time went on, he started saying to her just how lucky she was to be living in New York, this wonderful city, and how much he wished he could have done that when he was young. And by the time the elevator hit the floor, she just was in love with him and jumped into his arms and did, you know, just entirely changed her day and maybe her life a little bit.
Well, he obviously was a charmer, but he must have freaked people out because he was very fond of hugging everyone.
He did like hugging people, but it's amazing how few times he actually freaked people out. People like to jump into his arms.
And there was a time he approached a young couple that was kissing in an airport rather passionately.
Yeah, that was in, I can't even remember which airport that was in. Maybe Washington, and they were kissing passionately, and people were walking by and sort of avoiding their eyes, and he walked over and tapped the guy on the shoulder, and he sort of broke free and looked at him and waited to be lectured. And Buck said, "You must really like her." And that was they broke out laughing. But it was like that everywhere we went. Every place we would go, Buck, he loved people and he just wanted to be around them. And he wanted to engage them, and it was pretty extraordinary to be around that.
And he was often asked what his favorite baseball memory was. What did he say?
He always told them the story about Easter Sunday, 1943, and that was in Memphis, Tennessee, when he went and played against the Memphis Red Sox, and he hit for the cycle that day. The last one hit a triple, stopped at third to hit for the cycle. Went back to the hotel that night, and a friend of his said, "There's some teachers downstairs I'd like you to meet." And he walked up to one of them and said, "I'm Buck O'Neill. What's your name?" And that was Aura, and they were married for 51 years.
By your own admission, sports writers can be very jaded. There are all these scandals, all of the rumors of doping and other things. But I get the feeling that Buck O'Neill never really got jaded, although he understood that this was part of the game.
I think he understood it, yeah. And no, he definitely did not get jaded. I think he always saw the humanity in things. And it's very, very easy for not just sports writers, but for any of us to become jaded by what's happening, especially in sports these days. But Buck always looked at the humanity. Buck, for instance, was a very big Barry Bonds fan, and he always felt like this was a great, great player, and he was always able to separate what somebody was off the field and what somebody was on the field.
But you also say that he could really spot a lot. He'd been a scout.
It was a great
and so scout. Going to a game with him was an educational experience?
Every single time. It was a scouting experience. He was one of the great scouts. Scouted Ernie Banks and Lou Brock and Joe Carter and many, many other great players. And so he would watch. He could tell by the different sounds of the bat where the ball was going, how hard it was hit. He could close his eyes and he would watch the game and guess what kind of hit it was based on the sound of the bat.
And even tell you a lot about a player by the way they warmed up.
By the way they warmed up, by the way they stood in the on-deck circle, by the way they sat on the bench. He had a knack of just sort of being able to tell what kind of baseball person that was, you know, where they learned the game, how they learned it.
I mean, how engaged they were?
Yeah.
It must have changed because baseball has changed, and we've heard an awful lot about the generation gap in modern baseball. I'll be talking more about that with Frank DeFord
sure.
in a few minutes.
And there's no question that that's there. But I think that he was still able to see people and the love they had for the game, and maybe it's expressed a little bit differently now. But he felt that he could see how engaged a player was and how much they cared. And he would watch a player and he would say something like, "That player learned from his dad." That, you know, he didn't learn in school or in camp or anything like that. He learned from his dad. He could just tell by the way he threw or the way he ran or how hard he tried. He could tell how that guy learned how to play the game.
So I assume now you bring some of that information to a ball game yourself.
I definitely, it's certainly changed me, being around him as much as I was and how I enjoy the game. It's an effort, you know, to try to just take in the humanity of it, especially in these times.
Do you think he'll ever make it into the Hall of Fame?
I've been told that the Hall of Fame is going to do something for him by the end of the year. They are going to, now what it's going to be, I don't know. But I think they're going to create an award in his behalf.
Well, he did refuse to campaign for himself. Some players do.
Yeah, and he certainly could have. He had access to do that. Everybody knew him and everybody loved him, and he certainly could have campaigned. That just wasn't him.
You, when you quote him, you often separate what he said in italics. Is that because you think that he had a kind of poetic way with the language?
Yeah. You know, one of the challenges of writing this book was trying to capture his voice. He had this beautiful voice, as you know, and having him on here. And it was something that I wanted to be able to separate for people, and it seemed to work. And I think that's how I read him. That's how I think of him, as sort of a little bit of a baseball poet.
Joe Posnansky, we will be giving a talk and signing books tonight at 8 o'clock at the Happy Ending Bar and Lounge at 302 Broome Street in Lower Manhattan. His book, The Soul of Baseball, A Road Trip Through Buck O'Neill's America, published by William Morrow. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you very much for having me.